it's incredibly important that people resist what is being done in their name, resist and actually try and change the world.
And I think that kind of physical obstruction of BNP activity is very important.
We see the whole of the front of the main screened off. Two lock-ons right in the middle of the main road.
Oh, welcome to Rise Up Radio.
Hello.
Hello. My name is John and this is...
Jack.
How's it going, Jack?
Oh, I'm lovely, thank you.
Oh my God, first podcast. Well, what have we got ourselves in for?
I don't know what we're doing really, but, you know, we're having a crack at it. This is Rise Up Radio.
We're giving it a go.
Excellent. What is coming up today then?
What's coming up today? We've got a few features from Lots in the Media. Some news stories that haven't quite made the other local media, including a feature on the BNP activities and a big campaign surrounding BNP stuff around Nottinghamshire. We've got something about job seekers being subjected to lie detector technology when they apply for a new claim.
Excellent. And I caught up with Eleanor from the Sumac Skillshare, so we'll find out more about that.
Excellent, and we've got some music as well.
Yeah, got some exclusive tracks from a popular local band
called Moonbuggy. I think we're playing the first track straight away, aren't we?
Yeah. Let's hear a track from their forthcoming album, which is called Mashed Up.
Thank you.
lovely. Such an infectious bit of reggae. If you want to find out any more stuff about Moonboggy, moonboggy.info is the website address. Right, okay. Well, the next thing coming up is a feature, an audio feature about the activities around the BNP and a lot of campaigning against the far right in Nottinghamshire. This is a feature that's been produced in the Notts in the Media collective. Notts in the Media is an open media project. It's runs a website where you can go and publish your own news, sort of trying to get a picture of some of the issues that the mainstream media, such as the Evening Post and BBC and others, tend to, I don't know, sometimes less popular issues that they don't tend to feature as much as they should. You can find out more about this on the website, which is notts.indymedia.org.uk. Here's the BNP feature.
On Saturday, January the 19th, activists from across the Midlands and Yorkshire met in Nottingham to coordinate activities against the British National Party. Around 100 campaigners met at the Queen's Walk Community Centre in the Meadows area of the city for a conference organised by Nottinghamshire Stop the BNP. Discussions were wide-ranging and at times heated, but focused on the ways in which the BNP could be opposed, including the formation of a regional anti-fascist network and the possibility of protests against the BNP's Red, White and Blue Festival. Organised annually by the BNP, Red, White and Blue is a members-only event which has previously been held in various locations. In 2003, the event descended into chaos when a drunken brawl resulted in Burnley councillor Luke Smith bottling a fellow party member. Last year, for the first time, it took place in Codner, Derbyshire, just over the Nottinghamshire border, on land owned by party member Alan Warner. Despite widespread local opposition, Amber Valley Borough Council granted the event a public events licence. The BNP had intended to hold the event in the same place this year, but these plans were thrown into turmoil following a split in the party. Warner is currently refusing to allow his land to be used for the festival in protest against the expulsion of a number of prominent party members, including Broxtow Borough Councillor Sadie Graham.
Sadie Graham, who is a borough and parish councillor for Brinsley, was expelled for setting up what the BNP described as a treasonous blog. The blog called for the removal of Mark Collett, the party's head of publicity, the former head of the youth BNP, and Nick Griffin's heir apparent. Particularly controversial was the blog's use of material from anti-fascist organisations. The expulsions followed a Stasi-like operation in which the BNP's recently established intelligence department, which is fronted by an ex-South African police official, recorded and spied on telephone calls of party members. The BNP security department then gained access to Sadie Graham's house with the unwitting assistance of fellow Burnsley parish councillor and BNP member Nina Brown. They stole various pieces of equipment, including her computer. The decision to expel Sadie Graham, along with the head of administration Kenny Smith, was hugely controversial within the party, and many prominent party members have resigned in protest. Among this group are councillors, regional organisers, advisory council members, and the leader of the youth BNP, among many others. In the last few weeks, many of these former members have begun to consolidate themselves as the voice of change. This appears to be particularly strong in this region, and the founding conference was to be held on January 27th in Nottinghamshire.
A couple of people went along to the anti-fascist conference to record some interviews for Notts Indy Media.
I'm Daniel, I'm an anti-fascist activist from Sheffield, I'm in Workers' Liberty and I'm an activist in the JMB trade union.
Okay, and what are you hoping will come from today's conference?
I think one thing that's kind of been lacking in the anti-fascist movement nationally is a kind of broad, grassroots-focused campaign that has a kind of class perspective, is clear on issues, on issues of kind of direct action, direct physical confrontation with the BNP. It's clear on issues about class and about challenging the BNP on those class issues and not taking the kind of, you know, vote Tory or vote anyone but Nazi kind of perspective. I think all of the major mainstream anti-fascist campaigns, UAF, Searchline, and so on, kind of lack that perspective. I think it's been present in the campaign that this group's done so far in Nottinghamshire, and hopefully this conference can kind of cohere it a bit and galvanise it and maybe spread it geographically.
And what tactics do you think are going to be important in the immediate future?
Well, I think the example that this campaign gave and the lead that this campaign gave when it mobilised to more or less shut down Nick Griffin's meeting in Kimberley is pretty exemplary. And I think that kind of physical obstruction of BNP activity is very important. But what was good about it is that it was coupled with some, you know, kind of consistent work in the local community by this campaign, talking to local people, engaging them on the issues, you know, housing, wages, jobs, services. So it wasn't just a bunch of activists from the city parachuting into the town, stopping this meeting from happening and then disappearing again. It's part of a kind of consistent perspective based on engaging those class issues. So it's combining that kind of direct action tactics with a political approach based on class. And I think that's what's necessary for anti-fascism to be successful nationally. And I think it's good that this campaign is giving a lead on those kind of politics.
So how do you feel that the conference today went then?
I think it's been a success, undoubtedly. I mean, we've had over 80 people here, probably close to 100 people from a range of organisations with a range of political views. So we've been able to sit down and discuss with each other, you know, what sort of anti-fascist campaign we need, you know, the nature of the BNP, the nature of racism today, and how we're going to go on in the future and organise specifically against the red, white and blue and the BNP in Nottinghamshire, but the sort of politics and the sort of organisation we want to see replicated around the country, and how we're going to work with other anti-fascist groups and organisations. I think it's very important. I think there haven't been many conferences like this addressing anti-fascism in the past few years, and I think it's an important chance to discuss the issues, and I hope it's something that will spark a wider discussion in the anti-fascist movement and on the left.
What do you see as the next step, really, from this? How are things going to move forward from here?
Okay, well, obviously, the campaign in Nottingham has a huge amount to do, just physically a huge amount to do. We hope that some of what I said today has given people ideas, you know, and given them more momentum and, you know, perhaps more courage to go out and, you know, be more open in their organisation and to get more people involved. It's an essential task because, you know, despite the crisis, the BNP will continue to grow. Their base of support and the conditions that enable them to gain support are still there. And they're the things we need to challenge, and challenge them actively.
Well, can I just ask why you're here today and what you're hoping that the day's going to achieve?
Okay, I'm here today because the Red, White and Blue Festival is something that should be stopped. It's something that any right-thinking person should be mobilising against and organising against, and I would like to get involved with that. West Yorkshire in particular has a lot of BNP councillors. It does have quite a strong BNP. The flip side of that is that there is a lot of campaigning against the BNP, particularly Bradford and Huddersfield Way.
I'm a Unison shop steward and a member of Knott's campaign against the BNP.
And what do you hope to achieve today? What do you think you want to get out of the day?
A united campaign against any Red, White and Blue festival or any other BNP stroke real BNP event, but a campaign in which people have the right to put forward their own views and they feel that no one group dominates.
So how do you think the conference today went?
I think my feeling was that for the most part it went quite well. It was very well attended, people were very eager to get involved and active, lots of new faces, quite a broad range of people. I think in terms of success in any real sense, though, that's not going to become clear until the long term. If the Red, White and Blue Festival takes place, how effective we are in opposing it. If it doesn't, what other kinds of anti-fascist networks we're able to sort of organise and get going, and what sort of form our resistance takes. I think that will be the real test. I think one of the big things we're going to see in this region, Nottinghamshire, Midlands more generally, is the way that the split within the party at the moment plays out. The so-called real BNP is concentrated in the Midlands, to some extent Yorkshire, very much strongly Yorkshire. And it's those areas that if there is, whatever that becomes, if it becomes a new party, a new organisation, if it retakes the party and becomes the kind of controlling faction within the BNP, then that's going to play out here. It's going to take place here. They're going to hold meetings here. They're going to be very strong politically here. And I think that's what we're really going to have to focus on in terms of what's happening, where they're going, what they're up to, particularly as they've now threatened leaflets, which never happened before the split, and certainly not in recent times.
Some of the debates today, especially in the last session, were quite heated, shall we say, differences of opinion. Do you think the anti-fascist unity will stand up to some potential disagreements over tactics and so on?
I think it's a very real problem that we agree that we don't like fascists. I think what we do need to try and do is build a broad campaign which is effective, which is targeted towards the grassroots, which is interested in real people rather than in political parties in the way that certain other national organisations are. if we just continue building that, if not everybody's on board with that, well, that's a shame. But I think that's far more important than unity in an abstract sense. Now, unity is all well and good, but if you're unified and doing fuck all or doing something completely ineffective, then I don't see that that's all that great a thing to have.
The day after the conference, activists leafleted in Brinsley, seeking to capitalise on the split within the BNP to weaken Sadie Graham's position in the village. They did this in defiance of threats to the leafleters in the area last December and were able to distribute around 500 leaflets, covering a wide part of the ward. Anybody interested in getting involved in this campaign or just finding out more should check out the various articles on Notts Indie Media.
Right then, that was a spoken feature from Notts Indie Media. If you're interested in any of these issues, you can read all the background articles about it on Notts Indie Media, and the website address is www.notts.indiemedia.org.uk. Right then, next up we've got a band that me and Jack saw last Friday at the Sumac Centre. They're called Satman's Tash. And this is a track called Star Wars.
Don't want to screaming my name. You hear that? It's McGinn again. Let's get ready. Let's get grimy.
Okay, that was Dirty Grimy, the Infected Mix by Mac Tonight. And before that, you heard Star Wars by Satnam's Tash. And incidentally, Satnam's Tash, loads of gigs coming up, including on Saturday the 9th of February at the Hub in Nottingham. And then on the 29th of February, they're at the Frog and Onion. And I think that the Mac Tonight track is from a website called CC Mixter. Is that right?
Yeah, CC Mixter. CC Mixter is a project from Creative Commons. So all the music on the side you can freely download, and CC Mixter specifically is about remixing, cutting up, republishing. So all the music on there, you can find lots of music on this website. It's called ccmixter.org. Just go there, you can download lots of music, and if you're into making music, you can remix it. And
it's not copyrighted, is that right?
It's all copyleft. In fact, besides the local bands we play, all the music we find on the internet is all freely and legally downloaded and replayed. So, yeah, excellent. All right, what have we got up next?
Well, if you know, if you happen to be in receipt of Job Seekers Allowance or Income Support, you might be interested to hear this next feature that we've put together for you.
From the 28th of January, as part of an extended pilot scheme, residents of Nottingham will be subject to having their voices analysed by so-called lie-detecting software when phoning to claim for Job Seekers Allowance or Income Support. Voice Risk Analysis Software, or VRA, analyses a person's normal voice and flags up changes in the frequency and tone characteristics which may mean the person is lying. The Department for Work and Pensions, or DWP, has funded a series of local pilot schemes to study the effectiveness of the technology in reducing so-called benefit fraud. Following similar schemes in towns including Edinburgh, Durham, Harrow and Birmingham, residents of Nottingham will be subjected to having their speech analysed when seeking financial support while looking for work. The pilot will operate within a call centre in Lincoln from January for a limited period. People wanting Job Seekers or Income Support benefit are directed to initiate a claim by calling the Job Centre's new claims number. The Job Centre Plus call centre in Lincoln will be using VRA software to monitor stress levels in callers' voices and identify claimants who may be seeking support when not entitled. Callers identified as being a high risk of fraud will then be interviewed and have their claims examined more closely. VRA software is based on the polygraph or lie detector and is operated by the CAPSA Group, who are also involved in the government's highly controversial National Identity Database. VRA works by detecting inaudible fluctuations in the human voice which are linked with stress. However, this technology relies on a single measure, unlike the traditional polygraph, which also takes into account measurements of heart rate, breathing, and sweating. Some say the amount of money accrued through benefit fraud pales into insignificance when compared with tax evasion by the rich. There is also scepticism among experts and others about the effectiveness of the technology as an anti-fraud tool, and critics say that savings do not necessarily mean the software is accurately pinpointing at fraudsters. Polygraphs themselves cannot be used as evidence in court due to their limited reliability, and research into the VRA software suggests flaws in its ability to accurately identify fraudsters. An American study published in 2005 tested 5 different VRA devices and 5 different operators, several of them with many years of experience. The study found that these systems were only accurate in around 62% of cases. DWP press officer Darren McElroy could not point to any evidence to support the use of VRA software, but said DWP statisticians would analyse the results of the pilot recordings to evaluate the scheme's success at detecting fraud. He said that applicants whom the software labels as high risk will be subject to further investigations into their personal lives, such as having bank accounts checked or visits to their homes, but that these were usual checks. The software is hoped to replace the eyes of the operative as face-to-face contact is phased out in favour of telephone applications. James Plaskett, the anti-fraud minister, said, "I'm always interested to employ as much technology as we can to help us achieve further reductions in the fraudulent claiming of benefits. We know that this technology has been used for some years by the insurance industry, and they certainly claim considerable benefits from it. I think it's sensible for us to pilot it in respect of benefit claims. It is feared, however, that genuine claimants may be deterred from claiming when entitled to benefits." The Nottingham lie detecting pilot commences on January 28th. Our man, George, hit the streets of Nottingham to warn potential job seekers about the software and garner some opinion.
I didn't know.
What do you think about that? Do you think
it's an excellent idea?
Can you explain why you think it's a good idea and how you think it might benefit people?
Well, it might weed out sort of bogus claimants.
That's disgusting. It's invasion of your civil rights, isn't it? It shouldn't be able to do that. It's a bit much, isn't it? What's wrong with the way they do it now?
They're putting all this money into technology, like voice detecting tests and whatever, when they can just be putting unemployed people into jobs. The result is these places take the piss. That is the result. It's not like they're giving them major money anyway. Do you know what I mean? That technology they're putting in is costing them more anyway.
Oh, you might as well just come in for that and see. You could be like lying over the phone and it could like be turning out the truth. But your best bet is like to come in for it and to get it done over that way. Yeah, it's good, but it's also bad because it could affect a lot of people that are genuine trying to claim social. But you could like have a cripple on the phone and he's trying to claim money and they're telling him it's, you know, he's not a cripple and that, so, but seeing is believing at the end of the day, so.
So you think the face-to-face contact is a better way to do things?
Yeah, definitely, instead of over the phone, it's more easy and you could get it done straight away, so. At the end of the day, it's all about trusting people and that, so.
The state doesn't trust people claiming benefits, and should people claim benefits trust the state?
This pilot will target new and repeat claimants for job seekers' allowance of income support and will run for approximately 1 month. Data from this and the other trials will then be processed and the decision made as to whether or not to roll out the use of the software for all benefit applications in the UK. It remains to be seen when similar technology will be introduced to assess the claims of government ministers.
של מילים, ואפילו שיהיו המילים הכי מהפכניות ותשים רגל על רגל ותשב, המהפכה לא תבוא אליה. כי המנהיגות, אף אחד לא נותן לך אותה אם אתה לא לוקח אותה. והמהפכה לא באה אל האנשים אל הבית אם לא הולכים אליה.
Right then. All right. That was a feature about the job seekers now being subject to voice lie detector software when they claim benefits over the phone. Mm. Not a good, not very good if you ask me.
Oh, I don't want to say anything, you know, in case I'm rigged up to some kind of dodgy software.
Well, there's a lot of dodgy software around here. Right then, there's a little upcoming events section now. So I was just going to tell you about a few events that are coming up in Nottingham. Kind of most of them advertised on Notts Cinemedia. Let's have a look. Sunday the 3rd of February is an event called Smarter Than Yeast. Workshops, talks and creative activities to raise awareness of transition town Nottingham. It says it's a day of informative fun and activities bringing together Nottingham people who are concerned about environmental issues. Everyone is welcome. There is a workshop by the people from V3 Power learning about renewable technology and hand-built wind turbines. There's a workshop about permaculture. There's a peak oil talk by local economist called Brian Davey. Eco-poetry, collaborative art, live music and lots of veggie food. Sounds very good. That's called Smarter Than Yeast. It'll be on the 3rd of February. It's on a Sunday. Started about 2 p.m. in the afternoon till 10:30 in the evening at the Arts Organisation on Station Street. Then on Wednesday, the 6th of February, there's an event being held at the Sumac Centre called Coal, Climate and Environmental Racism. From 5 till 6, there'll be some exercise and games around climate change and environmental justice. Developed by people who have toured over 4 months and over 40 cities in North America. There's some people who are going to do a little workshop about how to train others. Popular education training for trainers. Then there will be food at 7:30 and from about 8 p.m. there'll be photo stories and there'll be some talks about resistance against the coal industry in the US. Right then. Friday the 8th of February. No Master's Voice, open deck night at the Sumac from 8 o'clock. Bring your own vinyl. Arrive early-ish to recycler a slot. It says, remember kids, this is the only needle you'll need to share. On the Monday the 11th of February, there's a creative writing workshop, which happens every couple of weeks, also at the Sumac. So that will be the 11th and 25th of February and the 10th and 24th of March, happening from 7:30. Right, then on the 25th of February, which is on a Monday, be the judgment of a trial of 11 climate change protesters who, in April last year, blockaded the coal-fired power station at Ratcliffe. I don't know if you want to say some words about that.
I've not got a lot to say about it, really, but the charges against the Ratcliffe 11 were for aggravated trespass. The court case is still ongoing, but the activists pleaded not guilty to the charge and have argued that the actions that they took were necessary in order to prevent the imminent threat climate change poses to the human population. And that's what you call a necessity defence, and it's the first time that's been used in relation to climate change in the courts of law. We're going to come back and do more on that next month when we know the result of the trial.
Yeah, so we're going to feature it next month. In the meantime, if you want to read up about it, you can go to Notts in the Media, which you can find at notts.inthemedia.org.uk. I guess all the background info is on there, isn't it?
Yeah, there's plenty of detail on there about the court case.
A lot of photos as well.
And some lovely photos, yes, indeed.
Yeah, there's a lot of events happening in the coming month at the Sumac Centre, which is known as the Sumac Skillshare. And what that's all about, George went to see a girl called Eleanor.
Okay, I'm here with Eleanor from the Sumac Skillshare, and she's here to tell us a bit about the Sumac Skillshare today. Hi Eleanor, how are you doing?
Hello, I'm fine, thank you.
Can you tell us what is the Skillshare and how long has it been going for?
The Skillshare is based at the Sumac Centre in Forest Fields, Nottingham. It's basically the people from the local community coming together to educate each other around practical skills, mainly around issues of sustainability and combating climate change and peak oil, but going beyond that as well to almost anything. We started it last October and it ran, we did 9 sessions last year. It runs generally on Saturday afternoons, one workshop each afternoon, and it's just started again last Saturday.
So would you say it's been a success so far?
Yeah, it's been a really great success, really. It started off quite slowly in terms of numbers coming to the workshops and people finding out that it was actually happening. But at the same time, I went to some of the early workshops on basic mending electrics, mending household items. And there weren't very many people there, but that was excellent because it meant that we all got more attention. So, yeah, it's generally been really good. Everyone's been really enthusiastic about it. We've had large amounts of offers of workshops to run, and then towards the end of last year, we were getting around about 20 people to each workshop.
So, you mentioned electrics. What other skills have been shared?
We kicked off at the very beginning back in October with a workshop on popular education, which is based around the idea of skill sharing about how to run good, interesting, informative and involving workshops. The idea that the people who are running the workshops could come along to it and learn how to give a good workshop. So that was excellent, and we've done knitting workshop, we've done a workshop on mass catering, workshop on food preservation, we've done a workshop on book binding, one on Linux, bicycle maintenance, a whole variety of things.
How is this different to, say, signing up for a short course at college?
Well, it's quite an informal way to learn, and the workshops are free for you to attend. You know, if you have any skills that you think you can share, then you can go along and teach people as well. Or if you see a Skillshare that has a lot, is, say, in mechanics, and you know that, you know, you're a mechanic and you know a lot, then you can go along and help teach as well. And it's basically all about our local community empowering itself and sharing the knowledge that we have in a sort of informal way.
Does the Sumac Skillshare relate closely to the issue of climate change?
A lot of the workshops which we're offering are skills which would help you in combating climate change. Like, for example, coming up we've got fruit tree pruning, so obviously growing your own food is important. We've got home energy efficiency. We've got vegan cake baking, because a vegan diet is obviously one of the main things you can do to combat climate change and your own carbon emissions. Clothing alteration, so that you don't need to go out and buy new clothes. You can either buy one from charity shops and fit them up, or mend your old ones. You know, one of the sort of main themes of this is just basically educating our communities, so our communities are stronger and more independent and more able to fill their own needs.
How can people get in touch with the Sumac Skillshare?
So if you want more information about the Sumac Skillshare, you can either go to the website www.eastsideclimateaction.org.uk, or you can email us at skillshare@eastsideclimateaction.org.uk, or give us a call on 07880 937 511.
Is one Skillshare enough for Nottingham? Do you think there could be other Skillshares in the city?
I think there could easily be lots of different Skillshares in all different communities. Yeah, it could easily spring up in other places. It certainly is springing up in other cities. I believe they're about to start one at the Common Place in Leeds.
How would you encourage people to do similar things in other locations, in Nottingham particularly?
Well, if anyone is interested in setting something similar, they can always get in touch with me with the contact details I've mentioned. And I can advise them on how we did it. Essentially, I just, in terms of initiating it, sent out emails and personal requests to people. Could they offer workshops on using the sort of existing environmental networks that I'm hooked into? And so, if you know, I'm not hooked into all the networks, and for sure there's loads of other networks out there that people could draw on. There's so many skills out there. People have so many skills and interesting, useful skills that we can share.
So finally, can you tell us what Skillshares are coming up in February and March?
So the main Skillshare programme is based on Saturday afternoons. On the 2nd of February, we've got building computers. So you no longer need to throw your computer away when it appears not to work. You can learn how to fix it practically. And upgrade it if you've got an old model. We've got fruit tree pruning on the 9th of February, which is going to be based at Cider Club and EcoWorks in St Anne's, so that's an away day. We've got massage techniques, so you can learn basic, I think it's head, back and feet massage. Bring a towel for that one on the 16th of February. Navigation, so that's basic navigation skills using a compass and a map to navigate yourself around the land. That's also an away day, one on the 23rd. In March, we've got workshops that include, we've got home energy efficiency on the 8th. On the 1st, we've got back to the land, which is people who are setting up rural housing co-ops and communities in the countryside and becoming self-sufficient, and them sharing their knowledge and how the issues of peak oil and climate change relates to setting up rural communities. We've got vegan cake baking on the 15th. We've got legal advice for activists on the 22nd, so if you've ever considered going on protests and that sort of thing but are unsure how you stand or what will actually happen if you did get arrested, we're going to have an arrest role play in that. And on the 29th, our final skill share is basic vehicle maintenance, so having a look inside your engine and giving you a bit of knowledge so that you don't have to take it down to the garage every time to get it fixed. We've also, on the 2nd and 4th Mondays in the evening, we've got creative writing skill shares, and on the 20th of February, on the Wednesday, 7:30 to 9:30, we've got a singing skill share. So it's also about making us able to supply our own pleasure needs as well. So we're hoping that a community singing group will come out of the one on the 20th of February.
Sounds great. Loads of stuff coming up.
Yes.
All right, brilliant. Thanks a lot for talking to us today, Eleanor.
That's all right. I hope to see you all there soon.
Cheers.
World-famous environmental activist Dr. David Suzuki.
Today in Canada, for many years, we've been hearing the media, politicians, business people telling us over and over again, listen, the economy is the bottom line. We've got to sacrifice for the sake of the economy. Our communities have to give up social services to keep the economy growing. The Environment Minister of Alberta a few months ago said, any environmentalist should understand that we need a strong, healthy economy in order to protect the environment. So it is the highest priority. Now, as a biologist, this has never made any sense to me at all. That the economy, a human-created activity, that this should be the bottom line. It's the Earth. That makes our lives and an economy possible. But I think by focusing on the economy as if it's everything, we are failing to recognize where we're going and what the real hazards we confront are.
Dr. David Suzuki.
From the moment every one of us left our mother's body, we need air every minute of our lives until the moment we die. We pump 2 to 4 liters of air into our bodies and we filter whatever is in it. You can't draw a line and say, well, the air ends here and I begin there. There is no line. We are the air. It's in us, it's fused to us, and it's circulating throughout our bodies. And if I am air and you are air, then I am you. We aren't separate entities. We're embedded in this stuff called air, with each other, with all people around the earth. And not just with human beings, but with the trees and the birds and the worms and the snakes that are all using that same air.
We won't be able to solve any of these problems until we change the way we view our place in the world.
Just a few weeks ago, cancer became the number one killer. Cancer was always number 3 after heart disease and stroke. Now it's the number one killer. What do you think that reflects? Maybe it's got something to do with the fact that we're treating air, water, and soil as a toxic dump. We need air every minute of our lives until the moment we die. And if we are the air, and we are the soil, and we are the water, then what we do to the earth, we do to ourselves. And the absolutely first bottom line that we have to protect at all costs is that we need clean air. We need clean water, because every one of us is 60% water or more. We need clean
earth, clean soil, because 98% of our food comes from the earth. And we take that food out of the soil and we put it into our own bodies. And we need clean energy because all of the energy in our bodies that we need to move and grow and reproduce is sunlight. Sunlight captured by plants that we then eat, or we eat the animals that eat the plants. We are the earth.
Right. I was just going to say a little bit about this podcast, because basically me, John, and Jack sitting opposite me, we sort of, you know, try and put this thing together, and it's all a bit of a steep learning curve, really. So, but we're really enthusiastic about this, and we think it should continue. So we want to do this monthly, and we'd really like your input. So either if you have any input in terms of your own music, or you know of a cool place where we can find some, you know, good music, or you're able to help in any way, if you go to our website, which is riseupradio.wordpress.com, you can comment there, you can find out how to contact us, you can listen to our shows, and also you can hear some extra features that we have been unable to fit in the show, but we have still recorded. You can listen to all that over there. Right, and there's some stuff we've got upcoming for next month as well, haven't we, Jack?
Yeah, of course, yeah. There's plenty of stuff coming up next month. We're going to cover the decision from the Ratcliffe trial, which is a big local story and of some interest nationally as well, in the movement against fossil fuel burning. We've got an interview also with a Nottingham resident who's going out to work with the Sea Shepherd Conservation Society, which you may have whom you may have come across in the last month, after there was a kidnapping incident from one of the vessels.
It's all right. Sea Shepherd going out to, well, basically police the Southern Ocean and trying to catch any illegal whalers. Whale hunting is still going on, mainly by Japan, and the Sea Shepherd is pretty much the only organisation who will actively police the area and uphold international laws which forbid the hunting of whales, especially in Australian waters, as was being done in the last couple of weeks. Anyway, his name is Dan, and he's going out on the Sea Shepherd ship, I think, later on in the year, and he's coming to talk to us next month. Got some music as well?
Yeah, we'll have music tracks from Coda Cola, probably Old Basford, and lots of others as well. So, yeah, join us next month, February.
Excellent. All right, then. So just to say again, our website is riseupradio.wordpress.com. Just get yourself on there. Come on, you know, comment. Let us know that there's somebody out there listening to this. And, well, I think we're going to finish off with another track from Moonbug, aren't we?
This is Funella.